You're listening to The Retail Perch with Shekhar Raman and Gary Hawkins.
We're going to discuss industry challenges and opportunities in grocery retail, AI, current and upcoming trends, and so much more.
Hey, welcome, folks, back to another episode of The Retail Perch. And we look like we're in a hurry to cram in as many as we can before the end of the year here, Gary.
And the end of the year is fast approaching.
Hard to believe. I know. 2023 is going to be done and dusted, folks, in a few days here. And can't believe it. I think we did close to 40 episodes this year, Gary, which is pretty good considering that we've been traveling quite a bit.
I think yes, I was going to say, given all the travel and schedules and everything else, no, it's really good.
Yeah. And, you know, I would love to hear back from these listeners to see if they would like us to do this as a project in 24, Gary. We've got a ton of content on The Retail Perch. And I think it'll be fantastic to maybe sometime in the spring, get an intern on, catalog the content, make it easy for people to identify. And now with all these cool tools, Gen AI, you can have them create short summary transcripts of all these episodes and catalog them and categorize them. I think it'll be a great resource.
We'll have to do Shekhar and Gary's greatest hits.
There you go. And you know, no pressure on today's guests to see if they're going to figure it out, of course, right? But, you know, based on how it goes, you know, I before the show started, by the way, we had a short conversation with our guest, and I have a feeling that he's a top 10 candidate. So I think, you know.
Shekhar, a man with two names? Got it.
That's right. That doesn't happen too often, right? Exactly. Now, a man with one name is also very rare, like a Madonna type thing. Donnie, you're right. Anyway, so this is going to be fun. Listen, today we have a topic that we've never dealt with before. And this is about multicultural curiosity and representation in grocery aisles, which I think is really important when you're considering assortment in your stores, who you're selling to, what's the location of your stores. I mean, all of that is such a critical part of retail. So today we have Jose Hochi Quiano. And so he goes by Jose and Hochi. And in, just in case you think we're talking to two people, we may interchange those names as we go along this episode. So it's going to be fun. But he says that he answers to both. So Jose, welcome to The Retail Perch.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
Yeah. So Jose, if you can jump right in and tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, what do? Where do you come from? What's your background? And what is it that you're doing currently?
Absolutely. I am currently the Chief Brand Officer at Rest of the World. We are a multicultural focused advertising agency based out of Texas. And I've spent, you know, more than 20 years in the advertising world from a global perspective, national, but there's a lot of passion for me on the multicultural world, and especially with everything that is happening now. I've worked with brands like Walmart, Best Buy, Nike at some point, Pepsi, Burger King, name it, a lot of the big brands. And right now, I think that culture and branding is at a flux, and multicultural and the influence of multicultural is at the middle of everything that's going on.
And how did you wind up in this field? Give us a little. What was your journey?
I went to college. I began with accounting, and numbers from one place to the other kind of didn't seem like my thing. Started looking at marketing, where it was kind of like the place where you can dream, where you can have a little bit more creativity in. And in my fourth year, I had to do an internship. I went for the first time into an advertising agency and haven't left since. That was basically it. I went into an internship. I got offered my first job and haven't left the advertising world since.
Perfect. So the Rest of the World is an advertising agency I'm taking it?
Yes, correct. My partner, Sergio Alcocer, and I, Sergio has a ton of experience. He was a builder of one of the most successful and biggest multicultural agencies Then, you know, that got sold. It got too big, and he wanted to do something else. And he launched Rest of the World a few years back. I joined him this year. We are the AOR, sorry, for San Antonio. We're, you know, working with a LULAC. We're working with brands, a Burger King, again, doing a lot of consulting, doing a lot of investigated work, because what is happening right now is unheard of. You know, the minority, everything that's happening in culture. So there's a lot of our work that is going into defining and looking into that culture flux and the impact in culture.
Interesting. So are you also working with supermarkets?
Right now, we have a couple of projects that we're doing. We do not have an official a supermarket brand right now, but we're in conversations with some. Absolutely.
So what do you think some of the things that a supermarket retailer should be doing right now?
Let me, if I may, I would love to answer that question with taking a step back and seeing a bit of the relationship of the supermarket with Latinos specifically, because that was, I think, the starting point of something really interesting that we started to look at. And I'll do this really quickly, and we, you know, we're summarizing probably, you know, 60 years of history. But when you do that quickly, you kind of see that a supermarket is a lot more than just a transactional retail operation. So the summary of the way that I look at it is of the relationship of specifically Latinos in this case with supermarkets, go back to when Latinos were coming into the nation, into the US. And they were not yet a force. They came in with their own cookbooks, but the ingredients were not necessarily here.
Right.
That's how the colmado and the bodegas came about. Because first, actually, they had to smuggle them because there were nobody. So they would bring them. It was the most treasured gift you can give somebody when you would come and visit them for Christmas. Bring them a little bit of adobo for the Caribbeans or the chiles for Mexicans. That was gold.
Jose, I completely identify, given that I came from India. When I came here first, there weren't a whole lot of Indian grocery stores around. Right?
Exactly. So that alone, there was a lack of accessibility right there. And the colmados and the bodegas came to fill that gap, right? So, you know, the way that we were looking at it is you could even venture to leave your barrio, your neighborhood, but you would never leave your colmado because it was the only place where you could get those ingredients. Then the Hispanic and Latino community became a force. Right. And that was the birth of the international aisle. Remember the international aisle in supermarkets? Right. That was a big deal. That was a big deal forever, because suddenly we were welcome. Not that we didn't love our colmados, but now we could go and do one grocery shopping like everybody else. We had at least the basics.
Right.
And then from there, that love affair just grew and grew. And now you have the multicultural ingredients all over. It's not just one aisle. It's everywhere. You have the fresh tortilla in the bakery. You have the guacamole in the deli. You have all of these things spread out for everyone to look at, for everyone to try, for everyone to venture. So what that tells you is, obviously, the importance of accessibility, but also the role of the supermarket has on its community.
Yes. So, I mean, supermarkets in this country have a long, long history, right, of being sort of the centerpiece of their local communities. And to be successful, you have to represent those communities, right, and the products and the services that they offer. So completely agree with you there. I think it is, you know, so I spent many years as a grocery retailer, right? I think it has probably become maybe a bit more challenging, say, over the last 5, 10 years, as communities have become increasingly diverse. And that puts the burden on that supermarket to carry very diverse offering of food and products across the store.
That's
No,
right. And Gary, I think there's a also there's an erosion factor, right? Which is I'm noticing that in the industry, like, in the town that I live in, we happen to have a an Indian grocery store, which is really the same size of a regular supermarket.
yeah.
And I think what traditionally used to happen is, my local supermarket I went to carried some of the Indian grocery items. They were trying to do that because they were trying to capture my full shop, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And but now you're seeing that happen on the other side too, which is the Indian grocery store is starting to carry a full shop. So it's a very interesting dynamic where you have these ethnic focused supermarkets that are trying to become the full shop for their specific
Yep.
community, and you have the general supermarket also trying to capture that. And I think it's a very interesting tussle when you're starting up a new supermarket to get a better understanding of, okay, what's the location I'm in? What's the demographic distribution? And what's the competition I'm really going up against? Because you don't want to have a whole aisle and you have no hope of capturing that market, and you're basically wasting the entire aisle, right?
No, that's right. And if you're a chain today, right, operating in many different markets, you've got then the added complexity of, maybe there's a significant Indian population in this market, so I have to carry those products. The store over in this market has got a significant Latino population that I have to, provide the right food offerings for, and so on. And if you look at that overall, from that, chain retailer's perspective, and that just brings more and more complexity,
Yeah.
right?
Plus the
To
fact that, I know, nobody wants to be all clubbed into one single box, but when you say Latino community, there's so many different cultures, subcultures there, right? So what somebody eats in Costa Rica is different from what you might eat in Mexico versus, Peru. And so to be able to cater to that, how do you look at that?
Well, I think that there's also another force that we need to look at, because culture doesn't happen in a silo. Half of Americans describe themselves as foodies. So suddenly, what you have is an influx of international, Latino, other multicultural, ingredients, dishes, and palate. And also, you have a newfound curiosity for creativity and innovation in the kitchen. That is a magic, that is a beautiful combination and a great opportunity for supermarkets to inspire that creativity, to bring into the forefront those new ingredients, and to kind of use them to create, because you said it, that it used to be, and still is, of course, Latinos are a mix of a lot of nationalities, but they are also a unique culture, because this is the only place where, because of the fusion of all of those cultures, that you're starting to get dishes that you don't find anywhere else. Empanadas de mole, an empanada from Argentina filled with Mexican mole. The only
Right.
place you can get that is the United States.
Right.
And that creativity in the kitchen, that unique a culture, combined with the foodie curiosity, you have a great place here for becoming a sort of a kitchen lab, if you want, for supermarkets in a way.
No,
Yeah.
it is absolutely right. I just look at, what we eat at home. I have an Indian background, but I'd say 50% of what we eat at home is international, right? Which is, we're constantly trying new things. My wife has a mocha hatte at home, and then, so it's I mean, we have a lot of the international you know, appliances type of stuff to make, you know, whether it's Jamaican jerk chicken that we have for dinner tomorrow, or it's, you know, are we going to eat chicken piccata, or, you know, or is it going to be Chinese noodles, or is it sushi? I mean, there's just a whole breadth of people that try at home. And I guess what you're saying is supermarkets now have to be conscious of how the kitchens at homes are changing with their palate being now used to more multicultural cuisines. I think it's brilliant. It's a super exciting topic.
So thinking sort of beyond just the food offerings, you know, I got to believe there's further impact in a couple areas here, certainly around marketing in general, but interested in your experience. So both Shaker and I go pretty deep in customer data and, you know, customer identified purchase data, typically through retail loyalty programs, that type thing. Do you see differences or significant differences between different cultures in their willingness or their comfort level to engage with a retailer through some kind of loyalty program?
I think loyalty programs are definitely very successful, and they are a frequency driver. When you're talking about your multicultural target, the first thing is the welcome mat. They have to feel welcome. If they feel welcome, if they feel that this is the place for them, then they will continue coming, and the loyalty will come from that. But the first thing that you have to do is, you know, say supermarkets should be all flavors welcome in a way, right? Because literally, it's all flavors welcome. And when you adopt that as a philosophy, and you let people feel that way, then the loyalty will come, and you probably will have a successful loyalty program with each of those segments.
I completely agree. I think you know, I guess data here, Gary, obviously plays a key role in understanding that. And I'm wondering if supermarkets, and this is maybe an open question for people who are listening to ponder over, is today there's no way for me to ask my supermarket, can you please carry this, right? And to see if there's some kind of a poll which can inform my supermarket, which is a customer survey-based assortment, right? A lot of time it's just based on demand and movement and historical and prediction, and you're using some demographic data to some degree, but and you know, it maybe is also a good way to kind of not, I don't want to say fend off competition, but at least keep up with your competition, because you're gonna have these ethnic focused, you know, stores, mini supermarkets keep popping up, because if you can't fill the need in the supermarket, they're gonna go somewhere else, right? I mean, they're gonna go to a Twin Cities market to go buy their Latino stuff if if you're not carrying the key ingredients in your particular store.
And I think that is a great idea. And I'll add a little bit to that, because it also brings opportunity. If someone in your community is asking for something, it's not just to bring it, understand what it is and try to offer it to the rest of the community. Why is it that
Of
this
course.
person is asking it? Where can I use it? And that is where that inspiration of introducing those ingredients that may not be well known, but that open opportunities for new recipes in an environment where people want to have and experience those new recipes. It feels like an equation that needs to be fulfilled, and whoever fulfills it will have frequency.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, supermarket retailers could look at this growing diversity as a massive opportunity, right? Because it's not necessarily just the products, the recipes for that specific culture, but as you were saying a few minutes ago, it's this fusion that's happening across cultural foods and recipes that is something, you know, sounds like unique to the US market, but I mean, that just explodes the opportunity to really make food interesting.
Absolutely. It's when you stop looking at segments and start looking at influence and how and where things are in the middle of all of that fusion. And that is a much bigger opportunity than just having to cater to a specific people because of what they want. Everybody wants what all of them have, or what they all desire.
Yeah. You know, it's also, I think there's a fascinating opportunity around the idea of using food to bring people together, right? People
Absolutely.
Of different cultures. You know, we always, again, back when I was a food retailer, you know, always stressed the importance of family and, you know, dinner or, you know, eating meals together and sharing that bond, that conversation over food. But that can be expanded now. And, you know, that supermarket in that community leveraging food, this explosion of different food products, flavors, et cetera, this fusion that's going on to really uniquely bring people together, which
absolutely
is something I think this world needs.
Indeed. Oh. Agree.
Absolutely. And, you know, clearly, you know, COVID played its part with getting people back into the kitchen and cooking their own meals in a big way, right? And there's only so many days you can eat the same stuff, right? You're looking for creativity and how do I change it up? And I think people probably experimented with more dishes in those year and a half, 2 years when we were all sitting at home than they ever did before.
Well, and delivery also had a big part because before I think there was a little bit of, you know, that state fright of walking into a place that you may not be familiar with or whatnot. But, you know, with all of the delivery options, and since everything was and is still available in delivery, people got to experience all of many dishes that they probably or couldn't have any other way if they wouldn't have gone to these places. And now they have a much sophisticated palate. And they look for those flavors, and when that happens, the mix. You know, I could see in a couple of years have a curry turkey be something for Thanksgiving. I could see that, right?
Yeah. Although I would challenge you that it's very difficult to make turkey interesting beyond what it is.
Well, that's why you need the curry. That's but this how you impact those traditions and you offer something new. It's a beautiful challenge, and this could be a very productive one if done correctly.
No, I'll give you an example. We, you know, we went to our family Thanksgiving, and it's a very multicultural Thanksgiving because we have, you know, Irish, Italian, you know, Indians who were born here, Indians who were born in India. Older generation, younger generation. So the cuisine that we had laid out for Thanksgiving was really interesting. There was, you know, fish tikkas to, you know, regular ham and turkey and everything in between. So I think that's happening more and more. You know, there's obviously a lot of cultural milieu within the society itself, right? Where you're not necessarily getting married to the person with the same ethnicity. So that what you bring into the home is different. Right? A completely different, the kind of foods you get. So I think there's an interesting dynamic here that will probably define what gets carried in the supermarket. What, you know, and I think, Gary, you're big on this. You know, we've been talking about how supermarket experience needs to become more experiential, because I think that's kind of where the real future is. And especially, I think the Gen Zs, they want an experience. They just want to go, don't want to look at, you know, passive shelves and pick up product. They're looking for something more than that.
Yeah. Well, and then you've got one more dynamic on top of everything you just mentioned, Shaker, is, you know, the whole health and wellness side of it, right? You know, people that need a gluten-free diet or a sugar-free diet or are on a keto diet or whatever. And, you know, that is, as we know, is widespread and seems to continuously grow. I know just in our family, you know, when we get together with our kids, their spouses, grandchildren, and so on, you know, there's some that need a gluten-free diet. Others, you know, are not eating sugar. Others have dairy allergies. I mean, there's no end to it.
The vegan community and things like that. And the supermarket needs to be a hub of education and information and inspiration for all of that. And to your earlier point, the household, so by the last census numbers, the household that is rising the most is none of its specific ethnicity, is the blended household. And that blended household is where that fusion is going to keep on going. Is where that everything that we're talking about is just going to become even more evident as the cultures keep blending and becoming one big mosaic, a mix of a fusion that this nation is.
No, I think it's fascinating. So in your work, what exactly, you know, when you work with a Burger King or some of these other retailers, what is the nature of that work? I mean, what exactly are you advising these people? Are you providing them marketing strategies or?
Yes. So we are a creative focus agency. And what we look at is before, I think when you look at marketing, 10 years ago, everything began with a media buy. And a media buy would guarantee you all of your KPIs. And then I remember the first meeting that we had with every client was the media plan. And creativity was there to kind of fill the blanks in many ways, shapes, or forms. That is not the case anymore, right? Now, people need to be talking about you. You need to get into the news feed. You need to tap culture. You need to somehow become part of what is going on. And I think that is where we try to bring the conversation and the brands that we work with to that intersection of the influence that multicultural has and the opportunity that the brand has to tap culture within that relationship with multiculturalism.
So how would you apply that? So if I was a supermarket and say, hey, listen, you know, how can I take advantage of this? I mean, how do I use this messaging to build up my brand as a
representative? All flavors welcome is a beautiful campaign that we could do for a supermarket, right? You know, that alone would be great to just bring in people and get people to talk about, and you could build from that. So that could be a beautiful strategic framework for messaging and action and experience for a supermarket. So, you know, Texas, for example, has very strong experiential supermarkets like HEB, which is, I think, one of the benchmarks. And it's building upon that, right? And getting that relationship and bringing more people in to flavor something new, pun intended, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, because that also has to feed back in through your assortment and your pricing.
Absolutely.
You know, all of that stuff gets impacted, right? And it's one thing to put, you know, lipstick on a pig and say, this looks nice. And, you know, this is my messaging, but there's a lot more involved in terms of organizationally changing. Right. And maybe that's why I know you go to Los Angeles and there are some Latino focused supermarkets, right. You know, like, you know, you have like a Cardenas or a Northgate or, you know, which are very, very tailored to the Latino community. Right. And but for somebody, let's say in New York suburbs, has a good smattering of multicultural, you know, populations, it's a little bit more challenging to decide, okay, how do I carry the right stuff in my supermarket to represent everybody that is around me? Because you can't obviously carry that many SKUs. It's not possible, right? Realistically, because of space and, you know, all these supply chain issues that you may wind up having. How do you see, do you have clients that you advise in cases like that?
I think that is where the phenomenon of the foodie comes in. Because if you cater to the foodie and you cater to the curiosity of the kitchen, then you may have limited time ingredients that you bring into the forefront just to spark the curiosity. You may have different things, seasonal, a kind of, so you may embrace a lot of the seasonal food from a lot of the events that happen from a multicultural perspective. What do they eat for this certain holiday that people may not know about? And you kind of put it in the forefront. But I think the key here is not only, of course, what you're saying is you cannot be all to everybody. It's impossible. But if you are the place where people get inspired and bring things to the kitchen where they can surprise their family and they get to talk about and whatnot, there is an opportunity, there is a niche, there is a place for
Yeah,
such
I see
supermarket.
that. No, and you know, I think Gary, you've talked about it in the past, thrown around this idea of these infinite aisles, right? Which is endless aisles. Which is, you know, you may not necessarily carry everything in your store, but if you have the right set of partnerships with these, you know, online ethnic marketplaces, you know, you could offer that up to your customers. Hey, you don't find it in the store, you probably find it online, right? So you can still capture their interest. From building up strategic partnerships that addresses the needs of your population.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that where I think Jose was leading is, you know, within each group, there are, you know, just like everywhere, right? There are people that are the foodies. There are other people that have, you know, large families that cook at home. There are other people, you know, singles or couples that eat out all the time. So within each of the different groups, it's sort of identifying who is your real target, who do you want to focus on, and then serving that shopper, right? So that, you know, just brings further focus to this. But Shiger, what keeps going through the back of my mind in this conversation is, to me, this is really just another way to think about sort of customer first retailing, right? It's more and more is understanding your specific shopper and you know, or shoppers, and then serving them.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, eventually, Gary, with any society over time, you know, there's a homogeneity that develops, right, over time, where you kind of the cultures blend into the people, and then you can't really single out one specific culture. And I think we're in a very interesting spot right now in the United States, where, you know, this melting pot is starting to all kind of blend together, and it's becoming this one dish where you can't separate the ingredients anymore, right? So I think it's fascinating. I mean, it brings in a different dimension to understanding your data, because you're not
Yes.
it's tied to people. It's tied to, am I serving my community in the best way possible, and am I messaging them in a way where they feel welcome to come in and explore and get inspired, right? Instead of, am I just a boring supermarket that just carries, you know, stuff. Right.
Right.
No, this is fascinating, Ho Chi. So where do you guys, what's exciting on your end? What's happening? What are the new things you guys are working on?
A lot is happening. Obviously, we're going to be launching a new campaign for San Antonio at the beginning of, or probably end of first quarter of next year. So that is great. We are in very active conversations. We just did a joint venture with an agency in Germany with could be a very powerful idea. And we're always kind of we're talking to an education a nonprofit organization based in Dallas, Texas as well. So there's a lot of open conversations, a lot of places where we can have a positive impact in society, and that's where we would like to focus, right? I think creativity data is it's an amazing tool. The data opens up a lot of eyes and it allows us to have a strong foundation. But there's something to be said to what we haven't seen yet, to how do you keep pushing the boundaries, right? So AI can, for example, can you know can only look back and give you something. I think advertising agencies and creativity as a product, as a form of differentiation, is the forward thinking of that. Is the opposite of, you know, how do we bring a new ideas that get you that get brands in the news feed,
I'm
and
just
that's
wondering
our
how long
goal.
it's going to take into this conversation before the word AI popped up. So,
I think we did pretty well.
yeah, we
Yeah,
did. We
no,
did.
we
We did.
did.
That's right. Yeah. No, I know. I think you're absolutely right. I think there's just a lot of interesting patterns in this data that, you know, and nobody wants to get caught unawares, right? I think there's and I think that's one of the places where these technologies can really help is identify trends that are creeping up on you that you need to address. They're going to be big tomorrow. And if you don't catch them, then you're going to be, you know, caught unawares. And there could be competition that comes by and just is able to recognize that opportunity and just completely take over the market, right? So
100%. I think it's very maybe even simplistic to just look at the Hispanic market because of the numbers, right? Yes, it is an opportunity for sales. Yes, it is an opportunity to grab a segment. But more now, I think, is, you know, when you look at tacos overcame pizza as the favorite food in America, when you see where tequila is against vodka, where you see where Mexican beers and Latino beers are going from a share perspective, you see a trend of influence in culture that it's difficult to grab just because of data. But when you interpret the data and you see what's going on and you see that all of those ingredients are no longer in the international aisle, they are all over.
All over, right. Have
access to them and they are embracing them. There is something interesting there, which is where the intersection of culture and influence happens. And the supermarket is smack in the middle of that.
Like the most obvious example is salsa, right? And maybe at some point in time, 40, 50 years ago, it was a specialized product that was in some aisle. But now salsa is, you know, it's like you don't think of it as international food anymore.
Right? No, that's right. And it's used in
everything.
Really, yeah, exactly. Anything, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now this is super fascinating, Hochi, and great conversation here. So if we have any of our listeners who are supermarket operators wanting to reach out and work with your agency, what would they do? How would they reach out to you?
Please feel free to reach out at our restoftheworld.agency, and I am Jose@restoftheworld.agency. Please feel free to reach out, send me a note, and we'll be happy to interact and talk about this phenomenon and the impact that it can have in your business and brand.
Fantastic. Gary, any closing thoughts?
Yeah, no. So Jose, please send us your address and we will get you an official Retail Perch coffee mug.
That's right. So,
next time we talk, you can enjoy coffee with us.
Colombian coffee.
Thank you so much. It's been a great time. And hope to see you guys soon again.
Yeah. And folks, this is probably our last episode for the year, which means that we want to wish everybody a happy holidays. Have a wonderful new year. We'll see you in 2024. And Gary, again, thank you for being an amazing co-host and the whole team for putting this together and for amazing guests. So thank you, Jose, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays to all. Bye.
Thank you.
Make sure to join us every Monday and connect with us at The Retail Perch on Instagram and Facebook.
And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at theretailperch@birdseye.com.
Until next time, this is Shaker.
And this is Gary, signing off.